The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
If you don't want to deal with commercials on the DTFH, there's two ways you can avoid that. You can go to patreon.com/DTFH and become a member of the Patreon family, or you can subscribe to a membership on YouTube. Patreon, you'll get audio, commercial-free episodes of the DTFH, and on YouTube, you're going to get video commercial-free episodes. So please do that. I do truly appreciate your support of my podcast, my family, and my secret God. Hello to you. I could see you right there through your screen. You're beautiful. My God, look at you. I want to kiss you. I want to hold you at night. I want to suck on that thumb. How come that never became a fetish? Sucking on other people's thumbs.
I've seen it in movies. I think it just goes for a man's thumb and a woman's mouth.
Man does not suck a lady's thumb, let me tell you.
Yeah.
A man will never suck a lady's thumb and gain that lady's respect. Now, there was a time when if you wanted to be viewed as a gentleman, that was how you would meet a lady, is you would gently place her thumb in your mouth and nip the tip, which is where the term nip the tip comes from. But now, we don't do that. It turned into the handshake. And right away, this is what's really fascinating about that, and I love stuff like this. As soon as it shifted from the suckle to the handshake, because for a man, you would suck his finger, not his thumb. It was actually an insult to suck a man's thumb, and it caused many a duel. You know, also the saying, just the tip. Mm-hmm. That comes from this tradition, which happened in all over the world, which is a fascinating thing about it. Even in petroglyphs throughout the world, you could see these incredible formations showing either a thumb or a finger being gently sucked on. It wasn't a kiss. It did turn to the cheek kiss. People didn't like that. Felt empty and weird. And then so to adjust, we did a handshake, which is really, if you think about the handshake itself, the hand is like a mouth encapsulating the other person's hand. And so that's the story of the handshake. But when they stopped doing the tip suckling, many of the plagues of those days went away. Because what was really happening is people were getting sick because they didn't really use toilet paper back then. It was too expensive to make toilet paper. So people view it anthropologically. You can read Fraser's Golden Bow, or Bow, as some people say. He talks a little bit about this. And he looked at it as a kind of post-proto-hominid cleansing of another person's hand by sucking some of the shit off their fingers.
Are there some like primitive cultures that are still doing that?
No, and we don't use the term culture anymore. We just say primitives.
Cool.
But the Hello, everybody. It's so good to see you out there. God, I feel good today. I'm feeling good, and I want to talk about something that's going to disturb you a little bit. So if you are of the sensitive type, why don't you head on out of here? Don't take offense to it now. It's okay for you to be sensitive. We all are sometimes. Every one of us. I hate that term snowflake. It's a derogatory insult. What's more beautiful? What's more beautiful than a precious little snowflake falling through the air, soon to hit the ground, melt, turn into water? And that water will be absorbed into the earth, suckled up by the tree. Suckled up by the flower, transformed into the rose, or even better, evaporate it. It will completely transform its form. It will go up into the air, become a cloud, and then maybe it'll turn into snowflake again. So if you're a snowflake, you're not going to like this, you bitch. Because we're going to talk about something real fucked up. Real fucked up. And you know what triggered it? I've discovered a new podcast that is fucking incredible. Incredible. So have you heard, have you listened to the Martyr Made podcast?
No.
Oh, God. It is, you know, it's like, it's ear glue. You can't stop listening. It's incredible. Like, the stories, the historical stories in this, you know, I don't usually get into this shit. You know, I have a lot of friends who are into this. I did read or listen to an incredible Audible on Genghis Khan, which I really enjoyed. Like, every once in a while, I do get into, like, history and stuff. But usually somewhere along the way, I don't know, I get a little bored, or you get a sense when you're reading the history book that it's not like some intentional, like conspiratorial concealing of certain aspects of history, but you do get the feeling that you're kind of getting a one-sided perspective. Like you're just getting one view, and you're also getting the feeling that this is sort of an academic view. Not that that's bad necessarily, but it's not juicy is what I mean. This guy, go to About, and I'm mortified because I DM'd him and fanboyed out. How do I not remember his name? That's how fucking powerful the man is. He doesn't have his name on there. You don't need to know my fucking name. Will you Google who hosts the Martyr Made podcast? I'm not going to look at my DMs where I DM'd him. Daryl. That's his name. Daryl. This guy, Daryl. Like, number one, his voice is just perfect for talking about dark history. Daryl Cooper. It's just fucking great. Like, so I thought my brother-in-law recommended it to me, but he didn't. So now I have no idea where I found it, which is very strange. I guess that the algorithm served it up to me. It recommended an episode about Jim Jones, Jonestown. And, you know, I love cults. I love cult documentaries. And I've seen pretty much every cult documentary there is that I'm aware of. I'm sure there's some out there I haven't seen yet. Most recently, the one I enjoyed the most was the Mother God documentary, which is incredible. Mother God was, this is the crazy story. She was the manager of, I think, a McDonald's, you know, and that says a lot about a person in a good way. Like, it says, hey, yeah, I'm going to fucking try to, like, make it. You know, there's a weirdly entrepreneurial spirit to someone who's going to, like, try to rise up the ranks of fucking McDonald's. And that is a shitty, brutal fucking job. And I mean this, like, to rise to the position of manager at a fucking McDonald's and have to deal with that shit, have to deal with being the fucking middleman between the underpaid employees and McDonald's, because they get minimum wage, pretty sure.
Yeah.
And I'm not positive about that. You get minimum fucking wage. And I haven't eaten at McDonald's in a long time, not to brag. I go to In-N-Out. But when I go to In-N-Out or McDonald's, and in my fantasy, the In-N-Out employees are getting like $50 an hour because the burgers are so good. I'm pretty sure that's not the case. But I like to imagine that so I can fully enjoy the fast food. But you go to a McDonald's. My friend, my God, one of my best friends in high school, and I really respect this dude. I always will. I'm not going to say his name. He got a girl pregnant. He had a kid. And dude, this guy, every morning, man, he would wake up at like 3 to go work at a fast food place to pay for his fucking kid. I mean, this guy was like, probably at that time, he was like less than 20. And he was like working fucking hard for his family. Really hardcore, really cool. But so you go in there and like, number one, it's dangerous. Because like a lot of the Instagram videos I see, and I think it has to do with the diet, people come in there And they lose their minds. They lose their fucking minds. You give them the wrong milkshake or whatever. The fries aren't out when they want it, or the fries aren't the right way or whatever. They'll attack you. They'll attack you like wild fucking animals. They'll like try to throw shit at you. They'll throw the cash register. They have these full zombie meltdowns because they're not getting the drug. And these employees are getting minimum fucking wage, and they're acting like these employees are personally trying to ruin their fucking lives by not getting them some greasy slop. Well, anyway, Mother God, as she was to be called, is a manager at a fast food place and takes MDMA, has a revelatory breakthrough experience. Whatever that former entrepreneurial identity was gets melted down by the MDMA. She is, you know, I do think that psychedelics will give you a kind of temporary enlightenment. And I think that a lot of people who take psychedelics don't want to believe that happened to them, or they want to think like it was just the drug. But I don't think that at all. I think it actually gives you a glimpse of what would happen if you had more control over the operating system that you call your identity, and or something else took control of it, reconfigured a few things, and boom, you get this enlightenment. Did she work at McDonald's? Yeah. Okay, Carlson worked at McDonald's before she became a religious leader. Okay, so Carlson, that was her name. So she gets some glimpse of the true nature of the soul. And I love thinking about that night. You know, you're taking ecstasy. You're managing a McDonald's. That's wild. That's a wild night. You're tired. It's a hard job. You're thinking about, like, some shitty employee. You've probably been indoctrinated into the corporate system enough where you actually are mad at them. You're not thinking, like, why would I expect anyone to work hard for minimum wage, for not a living wage? You're not thinking that. You're just like, this fucking, I can't believe Zeke is calling out sick. That motherfucker, does he not understand that we are our work? Does he not understand that? Doesn't he know, like, he could rise up and, like, one day, like, become an assistant manager? You know, like, she's thinking that. And then, boom, she gets some really good ecstasy. And I like to think about the manufacturer of the ecstasy. I like to think about, like, somebody, some lunatic chemist, the modern mad scientist, these people right now in secret underground laboratories all around the world. No one gives any credit to these people. These are lunatics. They are in weird ass fucking home labs. They are like figuring out ways to assemble the ingredients for some of these psychedelics, which are very difficult to get because of the prohibition. And so sometimes you actually have to synthesize the ingredients themselves. It's crazy. Maybe some are listening right now as their beakers are bubbling and they're just brewing up these consciousness shifting potions, these strange chemicals that will flow into the bloodstream of humanity and actually have and will continue to warp and change the zeitgeist for better or for worse. You don't know. I like to think for better, but then there's Amy Carlson. Pull up Amy Carlson's corpo pic. The one in the pink right there. In the pink. No, go back. It was the one right before that. That one. I'm pretty sure that's a corpo pic. Yeah. There she is. That could be the day she took that ecstasy. And some chemists didn't know what they were doing. They were just making a batch of Molly. And then that batch of Molly flows out through whatever illicit, bizarre trafficking conduits drugs are trafficked through throughout the world, this invisible capillary system of psychedelics and blow and cocaine. And it lands in Amy fucking Carlson's purse. And Amy Carlson slurps this shit back, merges with the divine, and begins to think that she is God, which arguably if we're going to create a unified, holistic kind of God, it's, I think you have to kind of say, well, we are all God. And we don't have the potency or power of God, assuming God is omnipotent and all that. But because, you know, God is a totality, then we must be part of God, which is the classic schizophrenic enlightenment problem. Is you get the sort of manic enlightenment and you glimpse that reality, but in the glimpsing of the reality, you adhere to your former individualistic worldview, and the next thing you know, you're the only God, the one true God, or Messiah, or the chosen one. So that's the problem. And a lot of people would say that's because you didn't take enough of the drug, that now you still think you're a you. You haven't merged into the full totality yet. And when you merge into the full totality, many people report this experience on 5-MeO-DMT. You are gifted this remission of individualistic subjective consciousness. It's like when you're in the middle of a weird fucking dream and you wake up for a second and the dream kind of sucked. You're like, oh, that was a dream. Oh my God, thank fucking God I didn't set my neighbor's house on fire. That's great. And then you fall back asleep and you're like, ah, fuck you, burning down your house. So this is the sort of waveform of pre-enlightenment, I guess you could say. You sort of get these little miniature glimpses of it, and then you sink back into the dream state of your life, and you get these miniature glimpses of it and sink back into the dream state of your life. But the problem is, which is why in spiritual circles and in the psychedelic community, you get these examples of these messianic, egomaniacal cult figures who emerge, because they haven't gotten the full dip. They've come back dripping God juice, but they still got their ego, their identity, and they become absolutely convinced that they are God, they know the way, or that they are in direct contact with God, whereas other people are not, and boom, that's Amy Carlson. That's the gift that this chemist gave to the world, is Amy Carlson, a kind of, I guess you could say, demigoddess who had some charisma, had some entrepreneurial spirit. And what's really fascinating about this cult, as opposed to other cults, is that whereas like you get Jim Jones, you get Manson, they weren't marketers. No one's going to say Jim Jones was like what you would call a classical marketing person. He didn't know about Etsy. There was no Etsy. There's no branding there. Jim Jones was charismatic. I think you could argue he's like the Elvis of cult leaders. But Carlson is a modern day cult leader. And so Carlson utilized the internet in the same way that, God, what's his fucking name? Oh God, what's the name of the cult? Sounds like a shampoo. Oh God. I can't believe I can't remember the name of it. Nexium was another example of this, which is Keith Raniere, who was an entrepreneurial cult leader, who both of them, what they both have in common is a wild confidence based on nothing other than confidence. So they like, and that is a really specific kind of dumb or ignorance, I guess you could say, which is you manage to, without having any real skill set other than charisma, to just think that you are the best at everything. You don't have the neurotic thing, or you don't have, as far as I'm aware, you're not getting a lot of imposter syndrome. You're not getting a lot of like, this might not be like ethical what I'm doing, because like underneath this exterior messianic persona, it's just a kind of old can of Vienna sausages, just slimy sausages down there, confused, muddled sausages. But you've recognized that all you have to do is act like an expert and people will think you're an expert. That's what they both had in common. And so using her charisma and drugs, this cult forms around Amy Carlson. And to me, that's really remarkable. And I think the HBO documentary Love is One, The Cult of Mother God, did such a fantastic job of illustrating the nature of a cult, which is, whereas like most people view a cult as a top-down situation. The leader controls the members with an iron fist. They don't catch a more subtle angle, which is that the members trap the leader in the role. So once you're in the role of the messianic figure, once you've really put it out there that you're communing with the divine, then the members of the cult expect that out of you. And God help you if suddenly you're like, guys, you know what? It was mania, or I just wanted to play around with being an all-powerful being. As it turns out, that's not me at all. I don't really want to do this anymore. Her followers, this group of followers form around her, and it's a party. Like, that's the other thing about them, as opposed to some other cults. Like, I do feel like the Branch Davidians and Koresh partied, but I don't know that for sure. I know they were banging.
NXIVM was a sex cult.
They were definitely banging, getting high. Jim Jones was getting high and banging, but the cult was not allowed to bang and get high, as far as I'm aware.
Is she the first woman cult leader?
No.
Okay.
Not at all the first woman cult leader. There's been others.
She's the first beautiful woman cult leader, because she is beautiful. Look at that symmetry.
Dude, it's kind of one of the dark aspects of our culture that, unfortunately, the cult leaders are inevitably dudes.
Yeah.
And I feel like I just can't imagine something more incredible than meeting a woman who said she was God, somehow demonstrating that to me via some, like, God knows what, parlor magic, real telepathy, I don't know, communing with my inner spirit. And then being like, you know, Duncan, I think you're ready for me to suck your dick. It's like, what could be better? What could be better? Literally, you think it's God blowing you. Like, holy shit. That is winning the lottery a million times over. And Buddhism's idea is you get the human life. That's an incredible thing. But if you get a human life and on top of that, a goddess, a literal goddess, not like I think you're a goddess, but this is a goddess demonstrating psychic paranormal abilities, a massive following, is sucking you off, speaking in tongues. Maybe you're speaking in tongues while she does it.
If she's sucking you off and speaking tongues, she might be God.
Well, dude, I mean, listen, or God knows what. I mean, there is a liminal space that exists in this world. It's those moments of synchronicity, those moments where something happens so far outside of your understanding of the way things could possibly align, the things that make you think it's a simulation, the things that make you wonder, is this a dream? These things, much like dreams, easily forgotten. You don't really remember them. You tend to forget these things because they're in this liminal space. They don't fit in, right? And in that liminal space, there are whole communities that exist. There are whole shadowy communities. There are solitary individuals. There are all kinds of people who explore those liminal spaces, know how to work within them, and they don't fucking forget the shit that happens to them. And these are the cult leaders. These are the magicians. These are the shamans. These are the, the healers. They're out there, man. It's real. And whether or not what's happening is just some kind of, illusion, whether it's a people who have the ability to, via their own confident madness, infect you with their madness to the point where you begin to see things that aren't there, or whether they're actually somehow have tuned into a human capacity that is yet to be quantified in any scientific literature, it's there. This is the realm of the cult. The cult exists in that space. And the moment you step out of default reality, which I might argue is its own cult, we live in a cult too. It's just a very big fucking cult. And because we live in a cult and we just accept things as they are, this must be real, this is the way it is. Though everything that we apply to subjective phenomena is a set of symbols that were given to us by our parents, by schools that didn't exist thousands of years ago, most of them. There was no America. In ancient Egypt, no one's talking about the president. They're talking about the pharaoh. And so, and also we know these are transitory phenomena in the sense that, like, the world is covered with the scattered remnants of cities, statues, religions. No one even knows what the religion is. God, my brother-in-law was telling me about the Cathars or something. Just this religion wiped out by the Catholics. No one even knows if they're real anymore. You know, there's so many religions that just disappear, blip off the map. So as America will eventually, as all empires will. And so, but the moment you step out of default reality into a cult, into or even a religion, you enter a new cosmology, and there's something refreshing and exciting about that. Like, your suspicion that maybe the secularist world wasn't completely an accurate depiction of what's going on here is confirmed via some mystical system. And that for a lot of people is the greatest thing that ever happened to them, because it's a very claustrophobic place, default reality. It's a very boring place. There's a set of topics you're supposed to cover in polite conversation. Once you veer away from that, you're looked at as a freak. So.
But you want to believe too. That's the, like, when you say that it's past us and we don't really concentrate on it and then we forget about it like a dream, those times that we stop and we look and we get, it's because we are searching for something and we're looking for something to believe in. And it just so happens that it lines up with, maybe for some people, a cult. You know what I mean?
Well, we're trying to go home, baby. There's a sense of homesickness. This is the existential despair that I think gets covered by a lot of philosophers. They, like, Sartre called it nausea. Camus called it absurdity. There's a sense of absurdity here. Like, you've been dropped off by your parents at a sleepover you didn't want to go to, but also you have amnesia. A general feeling. This shows up in child psychology, the changeling. This is the story of... In folklore, that sometimes elves, and I'm not sure why the fuck they do this, replace your child with an elfling child, a changeling.
I saw that on Hellboy.
Yeah, it's called the changeling fantasy. So it's very common for children to begin to fantasize that their parents aren't really their parents. They get a sense.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
That this isn't my family for real. This isn't my family. I come from somewhere else. This shows up in stories of the basket babies, the Moses. I think he was sent down the river. And, yeah. You know, this. So, like, this is probably pointing to that sense in the human heart that this isn't quite home. This doesn't feel quite where we belong. Like something's off here, but we're not sure what. And so what occults call themselves inevitably, the Manson
family.
Bingo. This is your real family. You've now come home. You found home. Welcome home. This is home. Like whenever you like get love bombed by a cult, that's what they'll say right away is you're home now. Welcome home.
Isn't this the family hour though?
My friend, the fact that you think that I called it the Duncan Trussell family hour because of some insane like cult intent is just, I'm insulted. It's the first time you ever insulted me. Absolutely not. That's not, it's a family friendly show. That's what I meant.
I apologize.
And, Thank you.
I will write in the journal that you gave me to not do that again.
Write it 10 times.
I will.
On each page. So I'm getting a little off track here, but Martyr Made Podcast. I you see a lot of Jim Jones podcasts and shit, and we all know the story. But the angle he's taking is actually an exploration of communism during the time of Jim Jones, which is brilliant because Jim Jones was a communist. And the difference between that communism and like what most of us see, like, you know, you Grimes with the Communist Manifesto or whatever, like that in those days, it was actually dangerous to say you were a communist. You know, like you could get fucked. And so it was more of an underground thing, more of a hardcore thing. And I really like that. I didn't know too much about the communist culture in those days, though I think we've seen little bits and pieces of it in like Oppenheimer and stuff like that. So he did a great job with that one. And so, but now I've moved on, and this brings us to the topic of today's podcast. He has a series on Jeffrey Epstein that has got me shook. It has got me fucking shook, man. It really does. Like, you know, I try to avoid allowing my mind to get too absorbed into some of the sort of mainstream conspiracy theories, like specifically Pizzagate, for example, because it's more of a kind of like unconscious feeling when I run into some of those materials, specifically like the Podesta emails, you know, Podesta's art, for example. Like, if you've seen John Podesta's art.
Yeah. And
can you look up John Podesta's art? I feel like we pulled this up before, but I think it's good to show it. Get ready. This is fucked up. Honestly, it's weird. His art might get me like in trouble on YouTube, and I'm going to have to use different kind of language for this. But Podesta's got, I don't know if this is John Podesta. I mean,
I think, is it?
Yeah. He's got a lot of art like this. And it's generally depicting children in some kind of what appears to be a bathroom or a tiled environment. That's the one I hate the most. Pull that one up with the kids with their hands behind their back. Go down one more. Right there. Pull that one up.
Do I show it?
I mean, that's what's so fucked up about this is I don't know if we're allowed to show this. This is Tony Podesta, by the way, not John Podesta. Pull this up.
This one?
Yeah, fuck it.
Oof.
Right? Like imagine if you came to my house. I'm like, dude, come over. Let's hang out. Play some video games. And I had that above the TV. How long would you stay at my house?
How good are the drinks? I mean.
Now that says, this is from Tony Podesta's art collection, photo of the Biltmore indoor basement pool. So now if you look at the, like, you know, go back one more. Now, if you look at the expression on the faces of these children, they have dirty hands and they don't, like, the third one over from the left looks legitimately scared. And there's something really fucked up about this art. Okay, you take it down. I want to look at it.
They all got red shoes also.
And they all got red shoes.
You've heard the red shoe theory, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's horrible.
So Okay, so I don't like to get too absorbed into this shit because it feels like such a negative rabbit hole that, and I do understand why a lot of people become unhinged in the sort of turning and facing this reality in the world, which is why this Epstein podcast, because you think it, you know, Jeffrey Epstein, of course, notorious child sex trafficker, mysterious fortune. Ghislaine Maxwell, his procurer, who's now in jail. He's flying around with like Clinton. He's flying around with like, who was it? Which comic was he was flying around with?
I don't remember.
He's got an island. But the part that has stuck with me from this, from where I'm at in the podcast, very beginning, I will continue. I will not be a coward. Is he mentions Dennis Hastert. Can you pull up Dennis Hastert?
Former Speaker of the United States.
Pull up the Wikipedia. So this is like, this is what Nancy Pelosi is. So Dennis Hastert, 51st Speaker of the United States House of Representatives, in office January 6th to January 3rd, succeeded by Nancy Pelosi. Okay, scroll down. Okay, go up a little bit. In court submissions filed in April 2016, federal prosecutors alleged that Hastert had molested at least four boys as young as 14 years of age during his time as a high school wrestling coach. At a sentencing hearing, Hastert admitted that he had sexually abused boys whom he had coached. Referring to Hastert as a serial child molester, a federal judge imposed a sentence of 15 months in prison, 2 years supervised release, and a $250,000 fine. Hastert was in prison in 2016 and was released 13 months later. He became the highest-ranking elected official in U.S. history to serve a prison sentence. Okay, so here's, I'd heard of Hastert, most have, but here's the really creepy point he makes. In this age where politics is no holds barred, where you want to find anything you can to smear the opposing party, when it comes to Hastert, the last Nancy Pelosi, Republican, nobody's talking about it. Mm-hmm. Why isn't that brought up? And this is the point he makes. You would think that they would be fucking pulling Hastert out of the closet. You had a fucking, like, serial child molester in office. The Republicans. Not a single word that I've heard yet. And so now there's a lot of things you could get. He doesn't like keep going into that because he's talking about Epstein, but, or at least maybe he does later. But the point being, like, what the fuck? Like, you know, when first of all, and I don't know what the story is with Astor. Actually, pull his Wikipedia page up again. But usually when you hear about someone who's a child abuser, they don't stop abusing children.
Correct.
So let's scroll down. Every one of these paragraphs should end with, Andy was a serial, there it is, sex abuse, keep going down, sex abuse scandal, federal prosecution. According to a 2017 interview with the two special agents leading the investigation, one each from the FBI and the IRS Criminal Investigation Division, Hastert had been on the FBI's radar as early as November 2012, even before the FBI and IRS began investigating the suspicious cash withdrawals that were Hastert's downfall. So that was hush money. So he was like getting money, taxpayer-funded office of the former speaker to further his private business ventures, something that Hastert was never charged with. So this motherfucker, you know, when you're writing that that check to the IRS back in 2011, some fraction of that fucking money got suctioned out by this vampire and sent to a kid he had abused. Think about that, man. Now, on May 28, 2015, blah, 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 unlawfully structuring the withdrawal of $952,000 in cash in order that to evade the requirement that bank reports cash transactions over $10,000. Wait, that's got to be wrong. Wouldn't it be $100,000? This says $952,000. Oh, I see. He did it like he was withdrawing like $9,999.
Yeah.
In late 2014, after being questioned about withdrawals, Hastert said that he did not trust banks. Shortly afterward, Hastert changed his story, saying he was the victim of extortion. Victim of extortion?
That's a good way to spin it.
Wow, a victim. Of course. Oh, my God. Are you okay? I'm sorry.
That's like you bite somebody and they're like, they hurt my teeth.
Yeah. Yeah. What the fuck? So now this shit is real creepy, man. And you have to, you know, there's things I don't know about Hastert, but if we just look at sort of like what we know about abusers of children, the behavior, it's not like they sober up. It's possible. They can get therapy. It is possible. Generally, it seems to be a lifelong affliction.
They always have those thoughts.
This is why we have a registry of sex abuse, of abusers. Because you know, you want to know if you live next to one, because there's some probability that they're not going to stop. So this brings into question a lot of fucking things. Specifically, like, what did he continue doing this in that position of power? And if he did continue doing that in that position of power, who knew about it? Who fucking knew about it? And that is so spooky. Because when you think about any like sex abuse scandals, Catholic Church being the one most people cite, I think there's a pretty good explanation for what's going down there, which is it's a contagion. You know what I mean? Like it lives in secrecy. It generally involves somebody not wanting to come forward to say this has happened because they think they will lose their job. They won't be believed. They'll ruin the church. They'll ruin the family. They'll ruin the party in this case. I mean, the political party, not the, not the party.
Like you're saying earlier, they don't go after him because he's all their hands are dirty.
Yeah.
All their hands are dirty. And that's, if you notice, the Me Too movement was going strong until the kids stuff started being brought up. Then it all of a sudden went away.
Dude, so yes. And so which brings us to like, you know, one of the themes in the pictures on Tony Podesta's fucking wall. Mm-hmm. Dirty hands.
Yep.
And so like the cult.
It was the Tom Hanks hanging on when he's
yeah, the dirty hand. The mark of the dirty hand.
Yeah, on the volleyball.
Yeah.
That's what they're saying. Yeah.
Right. So now because this is this sort of bullshit thrives in shadows. It's fungus. It depends on darkness. It depends on secrecy. It is, you know, getting implicated into it. It's not like you're necessarily going to do like Eyes Wide Shut. I think it's a lot more subtle than that. There's little like glimpses of something that's off, a feeling generally. You got to trust your instincts, but there's a sense like, I'm not sure that this is right. This is the beginning of this vampiric game of footsie with a demon, which is like, so, okay, great. They're not going to fucking say anything about that thing I just did, which means I can push forward a little bit more and push forward a little bit more and push forward a little bit more. And then before you know it, you've become actually implicated versus just being on the outskirts. And the moment you get implicated, you become an insider. There's horrible things about being implicated. You can now be extorted. you can now be controlled. But there's some advantage to being implicated, right? Because in the implication, you gain access to a truly secret realm. And it's secret because to leak what's going on in there is going to send you to jail. It's going to send you to jail. And you don't want to go to fucking jail if you've been hurting kids. You don't want to go to jail. But God help you if you go to jail as a child abuser. I saw this documentary, man. You know, one of these like hardcore prison documentaries. Let me mark that down. I don't think we could say that. But in the cell across from him, I believe he rips his sink out of the wall, somehow uses it to bash his own door open, and then to gain access to the person's cell where he kills him. So, man, that's a good way to keep secrets going, right? That's a great, if you really want the skiff, which is like, you know what I mean? The hermetically sealed area where you can do talk about government secrets. If you want some kind of sociological cultural skiff, there's the fucking skiff right there, man. Once you get into that fucking thing, you're not getting out. You're not getting out.
Yeah.
And so this is the honey trap, right? And this is what, like, you know, this is where I think where I ended in the Martyr Maid Epstein episodes. This is the, you're at the party, you're looking around. These girls, they're nice. They're kind of young, right? And so you're drinking. You know what I mean? You didn't ask how old they were because, you know, you're like, yeah, I'm sure they're not going to have young, flirty girls at this party. That'd be fucked up. Take some of that ecstasy. Take some Molly. Same shit she took. Next thing you know, you're locking lips with an underage kid. You don't see the cameras. And you're owned. At that point, you're fucking owned. They got your ass. You should be asking for ID, man. And so, this brings us to the deeper level of what I want to talk about. And I'm going to start off with something I've read before.
I always thought maybe they do it on islands or because the laws are different. So even if they do end up getting, you know, oh, this all comes out, they don't get arrested because it's like, well, that was from a different country. Rules are different over there.
Also, it's not easy to escape an island. Yeah. Chapter 12 of The Bloody Sacrifice and Matters Cognate by Aleister Crowley. I've read this before, but it's good to revisit it from time to time. Of course, maybe pull up a picture of dear Crowley. Aleister Crowley, born Edward Alexander Crowley, was a British occultist and writer and was greatly influential in the popularization of occult and groups, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and Ordo Templi Orientis. To really understand Crowley, you have to be much more well-read than I am. But he's a very controversial figure and actually a very brilliant person, really good writer, and very prolific. So this is from his book, Liber 4, Magic in Theory and Practice. I do recommend it if you're interested in magic. Of the Bloody Sacrifice and Matters Cognate. Magic and theory and practice. It is necessary for us to consider carefully the problems connected with the bloody sacrifice. For this question is indeed traditionally important in magic. Nigh, all ancient magic revolves around this matter. In particular, all the Assyrian religions, Osirian, the rites of the dying god refer to this, the slaying of Osiris and Adonis, the mutilation of Attis, the cults of Mexico and Peru, the story of Hercules or Melkarth, the legends of Dionysus and of Mithra are all connected with this one idea. In the Hebrew religion, we find the same thing inculcated. The first ethical lesson in the Bible is that the only sacrifice pleasing to the Lord is the sacrifice of blood. Abel, who made this, finding favor with the Lord, while Cain, who offered cabbages, was rather naturally considered a cheap sport. The idea recurs again and again. We have the sacrifice of the Passover, following on the story of Abraham's being commanded to sacrifice his firstborn son, with the idea of the substitution of animal for human life. The annual ceremony of the two goats carries out this in perpetuity, and we see again the domination of this idea in the romance of Esther, where Haman and Mordecai are the two goats or gods, and ultimately the presentation of the rite of Purim in Palestine, where Jesus and Barabbas happened to be the goats in that particular year, of which we hear so much without agreement on the date. The subject must be as St. Paul says, without shedding of blood, there is no remission. And who are we to argue with St. Paul? After all that, it is open to anyone to have any opinion that he likes upon the subject or any other subject, thank God. At the same time, it is most necessary to study the business, whatever we may be going to do about it. For our ethics themselves will naturally depend upon our theory of the universe. If we were quite certain, for example, that everybody went to heaven when he died, there could be no serious objection to murder or suicide, as it is generally conceded by those who know neither that earth is not such a pleasant place as heaven. However, there's a mystery concealed in the theory of the bloody sacrifice, which is of great importance to the student, and we therefore make no further apology. We should not have made even this apology for an apology had it not been for the solicitude of a pious young friend of great astor, blah, 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 blah. He's a little wordy.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Anyway, you could read the rest of the essay. It's not long, but he's going right to the heart of something nobody wants to go to the heart of, which is that in our world, children are sacrificed for power. Now, obviously, and I think Louis C.K. has a terribly dark joke, and I'm sorry if he doesn't. It's some other comic and he doesn't want to be associated with the joke, but I think the joke is something along the lines of, wouldn't you rather your kid be abused than murdered? Right? Like, obviously there's a hierarchy here. If you had to pick, you know which one you're going to pick. But, and I don't think I made that joke as funny as he. I'm sorry. You got to hear him do it. He is not him. He's one of the greats. But the point here is that they're in the same area. They exist in the same area in the sense that you are extracting energy from an innocent being to satiate, satisfy your own hedonic impulses. One of them, the way you're extracting the energy is the literal destruction of the being. And it is interesting to, like, if we look at, like, Christianity, it's literally a religion that has at its nucleus the sacrifice of a son of God. It's a child sacrifice ritual at the core of Christianity. And it's inarguable. For God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son. And it wasn't like, I'm letting you guys raise this kid. It's like, I'm going to let you guys raise him and then fucking torture him and kill him. Now, I think that's a simplistic view of Christianity. It's a literalist view of Christianity. But before you, like, recoil, it's important to note, and that's what the point Crowley was making, is, like, child sacrifice is in so many different cultures, so many different mythologies. And so when you really start doing this kind of math, I wouldn't recommend it. This shit keeps me up at night. And you think about the profit of war, for example. Like, if you want to strip away the reasons for war, the cultural reasons, and just look at how much money gets made with war. And so you can actually start quantifying how much money you can extract from an average child. So, for example, I'm sure nothing will come up for this, but look up children killed in bombing Palestine. Oh, okay, 13,000 children. Now look up, what bombs are being dropped in Palestine? What kinds of bombs are being dropped in Palestine? Do a kind of rough quantification here. New study shows Israel dropped 2,000-pound bombs. Okay, so now Google, how much does it cost to make an average bomb on your computer?
I know.
A military bomb. How much does it cost to make an average military bomb?
How much does the military spend?
Look up bombs sent to Israel. 1 billion in bombs. Okay. And then how much profit per bomb does a weapons manufacturer make? So it's a 20% markup on the bombs, right? So how much does, like, you know, how much does an average military bomb cost? There's got to be something out there. I'm just saying, you could literally come up with a formula for how much money these companies are making per blown up child.
And that's because they probably sell, like, the way hospitals do, like, $3 Tylenol or $7 Tylenol.
There you go. Okay. Joint Direct Attack, a JDAM, costs between $21,000 and $36,000. So what's that? That's about, if we're going to do a $36,000 JDAM, that means we're going to make, if we start selling JDAMs at $36,000, that means that, and we're making a 20% markup, that means that we're making around $7,000 per JDAM. $7,000. That's the profit. Now, from that, you know, you can just sort of quantify how much money you're making per child blown up. It turns into a literal quantification of the energy Crowley is talking about. And though I know this is an indirect kind of child sacrifice, I wonder what's worse. You know what I mean? Like, in this case, it's like, oh my God, whoops, we accidentally blew up a bunch of kids. So there's a kind of meaninglessness there, isn't there, to the situation. It's kind of like, whoa, fuck. Why were there kids there? You should have gotten your kids out. What the fuck? That was a mistake that keeps happening over and over and over again. But no matter what, as long as these people are making profit off of it, they are extracting a metaphysical energy, which we call profit. And where it gets even darker, and this is the point I was trying to get to here, because we all pay taxes. We're paying for that. That means if you live in a country where weapons are manufactured, where bombs are manufactured that land on children, whether you like it or not, you are participating in a child sacrifice ritual. A little bit of money is extracted from your pocket to go to the implement, the dagger, which will be used to stab, in this case, shrapnelize a kid. You know for sure of all the bombs sitting in warehouses right now, who knows where they're going to get shipped to. At the other side of that bomb is a dead kid. Mm-hmm. Without question. Which brings me back, my friend, to complicity. We are all complicit. It doesn't matter if you are the most anti-war activist out there. If you are buying Starbucks, well, I guess sales tax doesn't go to the federal government, does it? We could still have we could still drink Starbucks without killing a child, can't we?
No, somehow Starbucks is still probably helping that with their donations and their you know.
So that, to me, I think is maybe why the Epstein Pizzagate stuff really hits hard for a lot of people, and they think it's hitting hard for like a fairly obvious reason, which is, my God, I don't want to imagine we live in a world where you're driving on the interstate and you see a U-Haul and there's fucking people in the back of it.
Oh, I saw that story.
It must be a problem because I go to the airport and take a shit, and on the fucking wall they hang. Are you being trafficked?
Mm-hmm.
There's signals and hand signals and shit you're supposed to do. So you don't want to imagine, like, I don't mind thinking about the invisible mycelial capillary network that transports psychedelics from clandestine laboratories into my brain. That's fun to think about. But what I don't want to think about is there's a whole other capillary system that's got fucking people and kids in it that are being sold into slavery. And that's real fucking creepy. That's real fucking creepy. It must be a problem if they're putting that shit up at the airport. It's clearly a problem. And so then when you get it to the next level, which is I don't want to fucking think about some collective of very rich, powerful people who are hurting children. I don't want to fucking think about that either. And yet, every single one of us, whether you want to think about it or not, as long as you live, and I'm not saying just the United States, I don't know where the fuck you live, if those bombs are going to a place and there's one of those bombs accidentally blows up a kid, you have participated in a global child sacrifice ritual, and that's not like Alex Jones shit, that's real. If you live in a country where weapons are manufactured and shipped overseas and dropped out of planes and they kill a fucking kid, all of us share a participation in that child sacrifice ritual. And I don't know that there's any way to push back or argue with that. I don't think anybody wants to think about it necessarily, but I started off with the Crowley essay because he's saying this is a fundamental quality, a fundamental aspect that's been around forever in the way that humans interact with reality. It's horrible.
But doesn't it cancel out when you, like, whenever something bad happens, you put the Instagram thing, you know, whatever you're supposed to put around your photo to show that you're one of the good people? Wouldn't that cancel out what you did?
Dude, you're ruining what I was trying to get to. Not enough people are doing that. That's all I was trying to get to that.
Okay.
You fucked me up.
My bad.
Yeah, you got to put that thing around your thing.
Yep.
It's like a condom. It's a metaphysical condom. The, you know, and again, like when, you know, people get like, you know, remember that trend where people would say, I want to acknowledge this is on stolen land.
No, I don't remember that one.
Shut the fuck up. You don't remember that?
I remember when everybody turned their screen black.
Like, no, there was a trend. Pull up Microsoft. This is like a weird thing that people tried for a second and it was so sorely rejected they stopped it. Pull up Microsoft meeting where they describe themselves. It's the weirdest, most surreal shit you've ever seen. Microsoft meeting where they describe themselves and say, I'm on stolen land. I think it was Microsoft. Microsoft, like, they were doing some kind of presentation. Maybe say presentation. Yeah, okay, play that, play that. This is the craziest shit I've ever seen.
And welcome to Microsoft Ignite. We've got a big day ahead and lots in store for you. First, we want to acknowledge that the land where the Microsoft campus is situated was traditionally occupied by the Sammamish, the Duwamish, the Snoqualmie, the Suquamish, the Muckleshoot, the Snohomish, the Tulalip, and other Coast Salish peoples.
Can you pause it there for a second?
She made some of those up.
When they say that shit, you know what they never say at the end of it? And we're giving it back.
No.
And what they should say at the end of that is, we're not giving it back. Like, to be fully honest, you have to be like, this was occupied by all these people and Microsoft will not be giving it back to them. They never say that. They just say that's where it is, which almost makes it worse. Mm-hmm. Like, if I was streaming a fucking video and I'm like, first, I just want to start off by saying, I am in a house that I broke into and I just took a shit all over their bed and jerked off into their refrigerator. That's similar, right? No, it's not at all. That's actually nothing to do with it. But I did. That is where I am. Okay, play it again.
Memorial. A people that are still here, continuing to honor and bring to light their ancient heritage.
Oh, well, honoring. They're not there literally.
I mean, but they are honoring, so that feels good, right?
But you can't say they're there. You can't really say they're still here. There's no, like...
Not in a physical way.
No. You can't say they're on the Microsoft campus. No. Like, someone didn't just ride by on a fucking horse and, like, wave. Like, thanks for letting us move back in. You can't say that. They're not still there, actually. They're not there at all. I'm guessing they're not on the Microsoft campus. If there are, I apologize if there's villages on the Microsoft fucking campus of the Squamish tribe.
Is there a plaque, perhaps?
I mean, there's probably a memorial. Yeah. All right, keep playing.
Wines. I'm a senior program manager in our developer tools division. I'm an Asian and white female with dark brown hair wearing a red sleeveless top.
And I'm Seth Juarez, program manager in the AI platform group. I'm a tall Hispanic male wearing a blue shirt, khaki pants. Today we kick off 2 days of learning more about the latest solutions, exploring how these key innovations.
Yeah, okay, so...
I'm confused with that. Why do they have to say what they
wear? Well, the idea there is, like, so... They were trying to create, this is like when like this shit was like in full blast.
Yeah.
And so what they were trying to do there, and this is when everybody was hiring these ethics people who were saying, okay, I love the meeting idea, but first let's admit you're on stolen land. And in case people can't see you, describe yourself so they know what you look like. That was the idea. So inclusivity, that was the idea. So, and honestly, like, to me, like, describing yourself, I don't know. It just seems like, you know, it added a lot of extra steps to something nobody was going to watch or not watch. You know what I mean?
And, wearing a blue shirt.
Yeah. And so, but this was where shit was getting real surreal. And like, you would watch that and be like, what the fuck is happening? And then if you would, in those days, especially if you would articulate a kind of like, I'm so not connecting with whatever the fuck this is. People would be like, dude, what the fuck is wrong with you? Do you not fucking care about people? But in context of what we were just talking about, it seems to me, if we're going to make an order of priorities and what you want to announce before your meeting, let's start with what's happening now. So you might say at the beginning of your meeting, I'm on the Microsoft campus. We make X amount of money per year. We pay this amount in taxes. And that money goes to bombs that statistically have killed 500 children. Right? That seems more like this is happening now. You say that if you really want to cut to the meat of what's going on in the world. Or you could even say, this is the Microsoft campus. We use lithium in our computers. The lithium in our computer, some of it is not, well, it's coming from, well, mines. And the mines, there's children mining the lithium in the mines And so many of these children are not being paid, and within our computers is the product of their work. And I'm wearing a green shirt.
And you're white and Asian and a woman.
Yeah, exactly. Like this, so it's really interesting and it makes me think, is it all brewing under the surface of every single person? Is there just a general sense of like, I'm participating in child sacrifice rituals via my existence in a place where I am funding the manufacture of weapons, and that's so intolerable because we're all complicit that we're reverting to this stuff. You know what I mean? It's like somebody dressing. It's like someone, you know, this is a wonderful thing in the 12-step program. You make amends, right? So somebody, I don't know, they like stole money from you at some point when they were addicted to heroin, and they come to you and they're like, hey, I just want to say I was out of control and I made a lot of bad choices. And one of them was I stole money from you, and I deeply regret it, and I really value our friendship, and I don't blame you for never for forgiving me for this. And they're wearing a watch they stole from you while they're doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so this I think it's good to really sort of contemplate this aspect of the human psyche that wants to ignore this shit, because in Buddhism, this is one of the root causes of suffering in a person's life is ignorance. So, you know, one thing I do, and I'm becoming more and more acutely aware of it, is like I'll leave shit around the house. No big deal. Whatever. You're in a hurry. You fucking don't put your shoes by the door. You leave them by the refrigerator or something, you know, or whatever. Little messy moments, right, that add up. And that's what makes a messy house. But the other day I was thinking, like, what if I shit like that in different parts of the house? You know what I mean? I'd want to clean up the shit, right? Obviously. But it's still kind of the same thing. Or you know what I mean? Like, you're ignoring when you do things like that, that you're just basically, you might as well just like yell to your wife, hey, pick up my socks, or whoever, right? That's ignorance. And living in a world like that, where you are ignoring things that you're doing on a day-to-day basis that are causing problems, whether they're big problems or small problems, causes not just the people around you to suffer because they have to pick up your slack, but you suffer because some part of you is aware of it. And this is the beginning of all games. This is the beginning of all manipulative games. This is the beginning of all fucked up relationships. This is the beginning of all things. Is even though you know that you're doing this thing, you don't want to admit it to yourself. And this is where you come to this type of person, which is the mystery unto themselves. And so the mystery unto themselves person, they will, like, you know, go and bang some girl one night and come back to their kids and be like, why did I do that? Man, who am I? And then try to forget it. They'll go suck some dude's dick somewhere and then come back to their kids. Jeez, I don't know who I am. What was that? And then they forget about it. Ignorance. This is actively ignoring conditions as they are, right? And so in the contemplation of the bloody sacrifice, if you look at its connection to Epstein, to P. Diddy, to all of these unsavory underground secret groups that are hurting children, maybe none of us should feel quite so innocent. You know what I mean? That's weird. Now, I don't know what the answer is. I mean, it seems clear what the answer is.
What helps me feel sleep at night better is, although if I shit around the house everywhere, or I cheated on my wife, I'm not going to get arrested.
Why are you admitting this on the podcast?
I'm saying if I did that. I'm not saying I did do that. Mm. Yeah. So.
Well,
I do shit all over the house, but in different bathrooms. So it's in designated spots. But the point is, I'm trying to say, I'm not going to get arrested for it. If I don't pay my taxes for the bombs that killed the children, I'm going to go to jail.
Okay. So, sometimes it helps to take, especially when you have this diffusion of responsibility at the level of diffusion that we're experiencing in our country, it helps to sort of like make it a little smaller.
Mm-hmm.
All right. A police officer says to you, here's a knife. I want you to throw it at that kid. If you don't do that, I'm taking your ass to jail. Do you throw the knife at the kid?
What color is the kid?
Shut the fuck up! God damn it! Sick of this fascism!
No, you don't throw the knife.
You don't throw the knife?
No.
No, and if you did throw the fucking knife, no one would forgive you. Everyone would be like, no, dude, you don't throw the fucking knife, you go to jail. Right? This is sort of the reality. And it's brilliant because, to wrap the dark part of the podcast up, if what Crowley is talking about is real, if there is a methodology for extracting energy from children for power, then there, over time, people probably got in a lot of trouble for doing that. Houses burnt down, dragged into the street, drawn and quartered, burned at the stake. So if you find a way to do that, but diffuse the responsibility to make everyone complicit, to create a system within which that energy could still be transferred in a much more subtle, in a much more deep, hidden, invisible way, you still achieve your goal. But no one knows who's at the wheel, you know? It's not some dark warlock living in a fucking castle and people are like, do you smell burning? Is he fucking burning kids again? Motherfucker. It's diffused all at a global level all around the planet. So the
evil is decentralized?
It's decentralized. Well, I think absolutely. If we're going to look at good and evil, both are decentralized situations that tend to, I think evil and good can centralize. And when they do, it produces fantastic results for better or for worse. But whenever I like let my brain wander through these dark landscapes, I try to bring it to a less literalistic place. And I think, okay, let's imagine this, because we know child sacrifice is a thing, mythologically, literally, but then also in a lot of these religions, it's a good thing. Jesus, for example, an example of good sacrifice, though Jesus was 33 or 31 or something like that. So from that perspective, you have to ask yourself, what would good child sacrifice be? Well, clearly not killing a kid. That's never going to be good. But what about the inner child?
Ooh.
Right? Like, that's what you start thinking about. It's like, and this is also, I should have read this at the very end, and Crowley did write in code, and a lot of things like Crowley, I think he has a famous quote where he said something like, I kill thousands of children every day. And what he meant is he jerks off. But if you look at the very last sentence of this, of the first part of this essay,
let's do the 60-second savings challenge.
Step 1, download Rocket Money. Step 2, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step 3, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Basically, I can't find it again. Basically, what he says is maybe don't take this literally. And so I think that's a fun thing to think about is like when we think about Isaac, when we think about Jesus, when we think about any of the mythological versions of sacrifice, what are they actually pointing towards? What are they really talking about? Are they actually talking? When you hear the story of Buddha leaving his family to go get enlightened, when you hear any of these stories where there is the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna's on the battlefield of Kurukshetra in between these great armies talking to Krishna, the manifestation of God, and his friend, who's basically telling him, no, you fucking fight. Don't be a coward, fight. But these are, I'm looking out at my, it's a family feud. He's looking out at his people he like, well, I mean, this is India, but I'm just going to say barbecued with. As a kid, people you like, that's Uncle William. I don't want to fucking kill him. What kind of person will I be if I do that? And Krishna is saying, no. You have to. It's your duty. It's what you are. It's who you are. And so from that perspective, especially if you're looking at it not literally, I think there just is a point in every person's life where they have to take that part of themselves that's a child, that's ignorant, that's, I'm not talking about like the beautiful, innocent glory of a child that reminds us of the beauty of humanity itself. I'm talking about spraying the yogurt pouch on the couch. You know what I mean? I'm talking about watching a geyser of yogurt, like a volcano, arc through the air and splatter all over a white couch, followed by laughter, which is funny. But at some point, you can't be that anymore. That's the sacrifice, I think, that they're talking about. I think that if you were to look deeper into this shit, and I only illustrated the dark stuff to create balance, if you look deeper into this stuff, the methodology illustrated by Crowley here is not about killing actual babies. It's about finding that part of yourself that you can't let go of. That's an ignorant, willful child, not willful in a cool way, wants to get its way all the time, wants to eat cookies all the time. It's weak, whiny, victim-y, blaming. You take that thing and you kill it. And you don't kill it because you're mad at it. You kill it because you want the world to be a better place. And that's where you get to the part of this essay where he talks about incredible energy is released.
Nothing can happen without sacrifice. What makes it good or evil is good is self-sacrifice and evil is sacrificing of others.
Bingo! Perfect summation. That's it. And also self-sacrifice, like, in a way that is actually, like, effective. There, you know, if you sort of, there's a real sentimental idea when it comes to the inner child. People talk about, you have an inner child, we all have an inner child that needs love, affection, adoration, that needs to feel all the things that weren't given to that inner child by its parent. Your inner child is still there. It's covered up by an obscuration of dark, toxic masculinity. You have to love that child and use self-care and use skin creams and lotions. That shit. It's like, yeah, I don't want to deny. I think, you know, anyone who gets older, one of the cool things is you start realizing, like, fuck, like, there is a part of me that doesn't feel like it's aging. My face is, my body is, everything's shriveling, getting weird. But there's another aspect that feels brand new.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
That's what you see in your baby. That's what you see in kids. That never goes anywhere. It just gets covered up by wrinkles and stink. But this when you contemplate the idea that the stories of, like, leaving the family don't mean leave the family necessarily. Don't abandon the family unit. It's the core of all human civilization. Don't be a deadbeat, necessarily. Though there are exceptions, I guess. But when you consider more, like, no, like, you don't need to fucking climb over the wall of the palace and go out into the jungle to start the great journey towards enlightenment. You don't need to fucking take your poor kid up to the mountain and, like, tie him up and put him on an altar until God says, yeah, all right, you can use a goat. Psychos do that shit. But it's really exciting to imagine, like, that mythical sort of ultimate sacrifice is available, minus the blood. But you would really have to do it. You would really have to sever the fucking throat of whatever that ignorant, selfish child inside of you. Which seems to fly in the face of this idea of, like, pure self-love. But, you know, that's the reason Jesus means something. If the story of Jesus was God gave his only begotten and obnoxious son, who he really didn't like, who kept wrecking his fucking car and didn't listen to anything he said to the world because he was sick of him. Like, basically, that he sent Jesus here as punishment. The story has resonance because it's like, this is my only begotten son who I love. Meaning this thing in us, it's not done out of self-hate. It's done out of love, but for the world.
fatherly love, which is different than motherly love, because fatherly love is harder. You want that person, your child, to learn. So you're, it seems mean, but it's to toughen you up, I guess, you know?
Well, yeah, love, there's all kinds of love. And Jesus, I just saw this very disturbing YouTube video. It's a good place to wrap it up. It's some video like free range parenting. These parents let their kids do whatever they want. The dad was like, yeah, my kid stayed up till 3 a.m. And I went to him and said, Sunflower, are you ready for bed? And he said, yeah, I'm tired. And he went to bed. He's 5. His other kid, the older kid, never been to school. It's a blacksmith, I guess. Thinks he's back there in the fucking yard banging out a fucking, forging some shitty pulp metal pole. And he's like, I can learn anything I want because I learned how to make these metal poles. I'm a blacksmith. If I want to stop making my poles, I go and play video games. Have you ever thought about going to school? Yeah, for like 2 seconds. Why would I give this up? Though I have no doubt any parent loves their kids, I think that's a misunderstanding of love. It's like, how is that love?
It's laziness.
Yeah, it's really easy to fucking give your kid the Oreos. It's real easy to do that. It's very easy to like let your kid watch 7 hours of Blippi. You could just sit and fucking do whatever you want.
Yeah, they don't bother you.
They don't bother you. It's very easy. But as they say, my brothers and sisters, the road to hell is paved with Blippi DVDs. So there's my rant. Child sacrifice, global child sacrifice. We're all participating, and maybe the way to counterbalance that global child sacrifice ritual is not to become a sovereign citizen and go off the grid, but maybe the way to do it is to counterbalance it with a kind of internal sacrifice of the ignorant part of oneself in the name of the greater good. Don't fucking hurt anybody and don't hurt any fucking kids. Jesus Christ, anyone out there is fucking a little weird right now and think that that's what I'm in any way, shape, or form insinuating. Hell no. You monstrous fuck. No way. But thinking in terms of sacrifice, personal sacrifice, I think it's worth contemplating, worth thinking about. Well, I got to get out of here. I'm going to Indianapolis. May God be with you. Hare Krishna. Goodbye.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. It matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.